Bonjour, ça va, and welcome to the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition in association with Spotify. I'm Kate Borsay, and the quarterfinals are set. Ta-da! But before we get there, in studio, it's a defender who's played alongside the likes of Marta Formiga, Heather O'Reilly, Tobin Heath, Lika Martins, as well as a host of England stars. It's Chelsea's Anita Asante. Hi, welcome back.
Hi, happy to be back.
Tell you what, we've got some good games coming up today. But before that, a man who has his fingers in all the football pies. It's Brazilian football writer and Arsenal Women's Askcast presenter, Tim Stillman. Hello, Tim.
Hello there. Thanks for having me back again.
It's a pleasure. Well, the Women's World Cup has officially become USA versus Europe. It's the Ryder Cup all over again. Let's find out how we got there, though, as Tuesday saw Italy face China and the Netherlands take on Japan, which is where we shall begin.
And there comes the chance for Miedema. Penalty. Lieke Martens. En Nederland staat op een 2-1 voorsprong.
Well, Japan are out of the Women's World Cup and Netherlands through to the quarterfinals after a last-gasp penalty earned Holland a 2-1 win against the 2015 finalists. A lovely flick from Lieke Martens set the Netherlands up with their first. Yui Hasegawa got the equaliser and Japan arguably bossed much of the second half before conceding a penalty converted by Martens for the match winner. Anita, is this one of the best games you've seen of the tournament so far?
Yeah, most definitely. As a neutral, I think this is the kind of spectacle that you want to watch and engage with. Lots of quality on the ball, lots of good technical play, and the movement was, you know, at times exceptional from Japan especially. But both dynamic teams, and, you know, we thought this could go into extra time. It was that kind of a game.
Well, when Japan went all out on the attack with 10 to 15 minutes to go, you said it was the wake-up call that Holland needed. But Japan just couldn't find that second goal, could they? It was almost painful to watch because actually, if we look at the game so far, and Tim, I think I'll bring you in here to see if you agree, it actually probably should have been Japan, shouldn't it, really?
Yeah, it absolutely should have. I mean, they just created so many excellent situations with their movement and their passing. Even their goalkeeper, you know, was one of the best passers on the pitch today and the way they play out. But they were just finding all these little angles and they just couldn't quite find that finish in the second half. And it was really interesting to look at my Twitter timeline when that penalty went in, because everybody was just saying, oh, that's so heartbreaking. And that, I think that's just how everyone who isn't Dutch felt at that particular point in time.
Well, I love Sophie Lawson's comment, a yellow and a pen because Saki Kumagai dared to be born with limbs. So really harsh on Japan that. And actually, we saw plenty of goal mouth action from them. They hit the crossbar, they hit the post, they hit all sorts, anything but the back of the goal. It was quite frustrating to watch. But let's just revisit your wake-up call for Holland. Did you mean for that game, Anita, or do you mean for this tournament as a whole?
Well, I mean, in terms of the game, yes, definitely, because especially in the second half, you could feel the momentum shift and it went with Japan and they were knocking on the door and they were creating so much chances in and around the box that you were just like, is someone in Holland going to recognise what's going on here and you know, grab the game again? Now that Japan are out of the competition, this is probably the wake-up call that Holland needs to know that they've got to step it up as they progress.
What went on with Holland today, Tim? Are they not as good a team as we think they might be post winning the Euros a couple of years ago? Or could you identify fundamental problems with either the way that the team lined up or the personnel?
So I think they're not quite as good as we think they are. And I know Vivian Miedema gave some interviews before the tournament where she kind of said, look, we're not among the favourites. We're not. She kind of said, not quite in as many words, we're not as good as people think we are. In the Euros, I think, you know, there wasn't really a dominant team and it was a bit of a bubble and they won it on home soil, but I don't think they were anywhere near the best team in Europe at that point. And I've seen them a lot over the last 2 years, and to be honest, they very rarely convinced me. They needed to come through a playoff to qualify for this tournament, and this to me was in keeping with the way they've played for the last 2 years. And on the personnel question, well, the simple answer is they never ever change personnel. It's the same 11 every single time. And I really think the manager has to rethink that at this point and wonder if players like Jules Roord, for example, might be better served coming into the starting lineup.
Anita, you played with Lieke Martins. She got a brace today. You know a lot of the players. Were there questionable performances from your perspective, knowing what they're capable of?
Well, yeah, I guess we really thought that, you know, Van der Sanden would be a threat, especially down the right side with her pace and her dynamism. But we didn't really see that today. I think, you know, yes, Japan were good and they were quite solid as a unit, both defensively and in defense and midfield. But, you know, you'd expect a player of her quality and her experience playing at a club like Lyon that she'd be able to problem solve and create opportunities for her team and be more involved. Same with Lika. I think, yes, in moments she was good on the ball and tried to create, of course, but she wasn't as active throughout the 90 minutes, you know, that kind of dropping in and out of games, especially a game like this. You need to be 100% in it, you know, from the minute the whistle goes to the end. And we didn't see enough of that quality. But having said that, you know, I think Van der Donk was really inspiring for them, was very creative in the midfield, tried to make as much as possible happen. But of course, she needs those other players to sort of support her game and support the team as a whole to create more.
I've got a note here. In all seriousness, it says, is it because Shanice van der Sanden's changed her hair? Well, they won. The old leopard spots or whatever they were have gone. Maybe we'll see a different haircut for the next one. Who knows? Let's revisit Japan's equaliser because this is important to mention, Tim. Superb build-up play and a great finish by Hasegawa. Sue Smith said in commentary, one of the best goals of the tournament she's seen so far. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And Sue would know with her kind of credentials. But absolutely, I think the finish is so, so underrated. I'm not sure if the commentary team quite picked up on what Hasegawa did there. She kind of almost flipped it on her boot and flipped it away from Sari van Veenendaal. She just lifted it.
It was a lovely piece of skill, wasn't it?
It was, and it just said everything about the way Japan approached this game. It was super calm. It was super cool. We saw them just stroking the ball around their own six-yard box at times, and that finish just kind of said everything about Japan's approach and the build-up to it as well. I think one of the important things when you watch Japan at the moment, they don't have an obvious star. But I actually think given the way they play, that's a big strength for them. They don't panic and try and just funnel the ball through to a player like perhaps we saw Australia doing with Sam Kerr. They just keep playing their way the whole time and they're a joy to watch. I'm honestly gutted they're out.
Yeah, it actually sounds like Japan are through, but they're not, just in case you happen to have fast-forwarded by accident. The Dutch are through. Tim, you've hinted at this. Is it a case of how good Japan could be? We know that they're concentrating on the Olympics next year, a home Olympics in Tokyo. This is really enticing. This is something to look forward to, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen this throughout the last couple of years from Japan. They've been on this project when they played England in the Sheba Leagues. You know, they were in the final and effectively against England and they had a chance to win it. And they decided to put out a young side. Even in a final, they were seeing the bigger picture. They were working towards the Olympics, maybe even the next World Cup. And to be honest, I might go home and look up the odds for them for the 2023 World Cup because they look so exciting to me.
Yeah, really encouraging stuff. Well, we're joined by author and women's football journalist Kieran Tavam, who's been at the game this evening. Kieran, a great game to watch. Do the Dutch, though, appreciate that they've had a lucky escape?
If the mix zone is anything to go by, then definitely. There was some loud cheering from some of the players. Obviously very relieved. I think they know that they've probably got away with one a little bit. I think Japan certainly had the better of that second half. First half, I would say, was fairly even. I think when you look at social media, I think a lot of people have said that this was probably one of the games of the tournament, two very evenly matched teams. But I think we saw the best of Japan in this game. I think where they've probably underperformed a little bit in the lead up to this round of the competition. But I think at times they were dominating the Netherlands. We saw them hit the bar. We saw Sari van Veenendaal have to make a few good saves. And I think that they can count themselves very unlucky. I have to be careful what I say because of my position. But that handball was, dubious to say the least, I think.
This might sound weird, but will this performance, will this match up against Japan dent their confidence or will it reinforce it?
I think the sign of a good side is when you haven't necessarily played your best and you still win. I think we've seen that a lot in different competitions, probably more so on the men's side. I think the women's teams tends to come out on top. But I think we saw the Netherlands not necessarily at their best today. I think at times they played some really nice football. But I think the sign of a good side is one that wins when they haven't necessarily played their best. So I think it will reinforce their confidence, to be honest with you. And I think when you look at the potential teams that they could have faced in the quarterfinals, they will probably fancy their chances against Italy. The Italians have had a phenomenal tournament. I think Leanne Sanderson put out a tweet that I completely agree with, that this is what happens when a league goes professional. I think the Italians are benefiting from that hugely. But I think the Netherlands will fancy their chances. And it was actually the Netherlands that beat Italy to qualify for the 2015 competition. So they have a psychological edge, perhaps. It won't be easy, but I think they'll be confident going into that one.
Author and women's football journalist Kieran Taberman. Kieran was lucky enough to catch up with Dominique Bloodworth after the game as well and asked her how she was feeling.
There's only one word I can describe it with, and that's incredible.
How difficult was that second half? Because Japan really upped their game, and we probably saw the best of them in this tournament in that second half.
Yeah, I think it was really difficult. You saw that they created a lot of chances and that we were struggling a little bit in defense. You know, they have some players that are going into the ball and some players that are going deep, which is really hard to defend because you have to make sure that you're all the time at the right spot as a defender. So sometimes it was really hard, but we were lucky that, you know, they weren't clinical enough. And at a certain point, we got this penalty, and so we went 2-1.
First time that the Netherlands have won a knockout match at a Women's World Cup. How special is that?
Yeah, it's really special, especially now that I can be on the pitch and help the team out as well. So for me, especially, it's also very special, and I'm enjoying every minute here in the World Cup. So I just can't wait for the quarterfinals.
Italy in the quarterfinals, they're obviously having a good tournament themselves, maybe surprising a few people. How much are you looking forward to that one?
I'm really looking forward to it. Italy is a team that has a lot of passion and they love football, so that's something that we're really looking forward to. And I'm curious how they are, because I remember 4 years ago we beat them, and so that meant that we were going to the World Cup, so that was tough for them probably, but seeing them doing so well, it's exciting.
Netherlands defender Dominique Bloodworth speaking with Kieran Tavem there. Well, as Dominique's just said, Netherlands play Italy in the quarterfinals. Next up, let's find out how Italy got there. Balance ton quoi. Même si tu parles mal des filles, je sais qu'au fond t'as compris. Balance ton quoi. Okay, so Italy make the final eight of the Women's World Cup for the first time since 1991. The side with a convincing 2-0 win over China. Valentina Giacinti with the first goal 15 minutes in, and Italy's super sub Aurora Galli sealing the deal early in the second half. Anita, this Italy side just continue to impress, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's super exciting to watch them play. I think they're a really dynamic side. Their attacks are really fast-paced, and a lot of teams have found it difficult, I think, to nullify their threats. But like we talked about before, I think obviously their league, having more players playing full-time and training, it's showing in this national team.
There's a lot of support behind them from the country as well, and you can almost feel them performing to match that expectation and almost wanting to cement their place, to feel like they are, you know, worthy of backing, which is lovely, and which is the story of so many women's teams, I suppose. Anita, you know this more than anything else. When you start to feel a swell of support, you've got to see it through. You've got to get that message out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, now they're going to have so many new supporters, I think, off the back of this competition, because they've shown desire, determination, passion throughout this competition so far. And they've been a joy to watch, actually, in the games. And they've really come in and said, you know what, we're here to play for something. And, you know, whether you like it or not, you've got to stop our momentum, which they have.
Yeah, and we know that traditionally Italian football fans can get very frustrated with the defensive style of play, typically, if we're to brand them with something. And a defensive style of play is certainly not what this Italy side is about. It's all about the other end, Tim.
Yeah, absolutely. Their front three, I think, has been one of, if not the best kind of looking front three in the tournament so far. And what's quite interesting is, I think, perhaps Barbara Boninsaya was well known before this tournament for her work at Juventus, and she had a brilliant kind of first game, maybe first two games. She's gone a bit quiet, but I just wonder if defenders are focusing so much on her that they're leaving the likes of Girelli and Galli open, because they're scoring goals. And they break with speed and purpose, and they're quite direct as well. And I think a lot of teams just haven't been able to cope with that at this tournament.
Well, Tim Italy's first goal scored by Giacinti. She came on as a sub in the first two of Italy's group games, but has started the last two games. And I wonder whether competition for places is key in this Italian side, particularly with that wealth of attacking talent.
Yeah, absolutely. And she was absolutely brilliant. She was everywhere. I don't know exactly how many kilometres she ran in this game, but I wouldn't be surprised if she ran more than anybody else, because she was all over the place. She was protecting her right back for the goal as well. She's in there and she's anticipating the loose ball, and she gets in there much quicker than the China defence. And she was an absolute live wire today. I thought she was probably the best player on the pitch.
One of the issues for you with China, Anita, what have you picked out?
Well, I think they just look like they haven't really got out the blocks in general in this competition. And today they were really sloppy, I think, defensively, in their clearances weren't convincing. And it didn't even seem that they were proactive to the second balls that were threats in their own box. It's kind of mystifying that you're not really seeing that injection of energy from them.
They actually looked lackluster. They looked overly rigid to me and have just not inspired, for me, anything. I can't, you know, when I think about this China team, they played well in that first half against Germany in the first group game. Mm. And they held Spain, but that was a pretty boring game, to be honest, in the final group game. They just, for me, haven't got any verve, Tim.
No, and I was so disappointed with them, particularly in the first 30 minutes of this game. They just allowed Italy to dominate them. And we know they're quite a defensive side, but they didn't even look solid. They just looked completely passive. And they had six players in their starting lineup with more than 100 international caps. And that's
wow.
That's what really disappointed me. They've got all these really experienced internationals. And actually, to be fair, after that first half an hour, they actually played OK. And they were perhaps a bit unlucky because Italy's second goal sucker punches them at a time when they look like they've got some attacking intent. But I was hugely disappointed. I was expecting more from them in this whole tournament, not just this game.
Yeah, Italy head coach Milena Bertolini said her players are on a mission to help the country discover and appreciate the women's game. Great quote from her. How far can Italy go in this tournament, Anita?
I wouldn't even rule them out going as far as to the final, because at this point they have so much momentum. They're going to have the self-belief,
yes,
and the confidence. You can see that in the way they're playing. They've got
nothing the Netherlands to lose. Next, haven't they? And we've already heard that we were, you know, far from convinced by the Netherlands today.
Exactly. They've got nothing to lose at this point. You know, people weren't even looking at them as major contenders as such. So, you know, they can go in with that pressure off, go out there, enjoy it, have fun. They know exactly what kind of mission they're on. They want to motivate their nation to get behind them. And they have the perfect opportunity now to really strive for that.
Well, it's going to be an exciting one, isn't it, next up? So Italy versus Netherlands, the two sides will meet in the quarterfinals. Well, that's the last game then of the round of 16. Those final eight, as we've said, are set, and we'll be looking ahead to those momentarily.
Well, hello there, offside rulers. This is producer Ben from the Totally Football Show, suggesting very politely that when you're done with this latest episode of Kate & Co, that you should mosey on over to the award-winning Totally Football Show, where we have two podcasts for you every week throughout the summer. This week, you can hear us lamenting Newcastle's decision to part ways with Rafa Benitez.
It's not just bad for Newcastle, it's bad for football as a whole. It is the whole idea of, we can do the right thing, but how much money would it cost?
We've got Julien Laurent on Neymar's future, or lack thereof, at PSG.
For him now to say, I regret leaving Barcelona, and he implemented the whole move. It was nothing to do with PSG at the start. And now they're very much open to him going anywhere he wants. If he wants to go back to Barcelona, go to United, go to Real Madrid, go to anywhere. Because I think they really want to build their team now around Kylian Mbappe.
And we've got updates from the Copa America, the Africa Cup of Nations and the Under 21 Euros. So search for The Totally Football Show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, at all the usual places. Keep up to date with what we're doing at The Totally Show.
It's the Offside Rule here, Women's World Cup edition. And in the studio, it's me, Kate Borsay, Anita Asante and Tim Stillman. So, the quarterfinals, this is how they line up. England play Norway, USA are against France, it's Italy versus the Netherlands and Germany versus Sweden. Or it's just simply the Ryder Cup of football. The USA versus the whole of Europe. Who wins from here? Who's looking good for you two, Tim?
I still think the winner will come from the winner of the France-USA game. I think a lot of people feel, as I feel, that that probably should have been the final. I still think that maybe France will take it. That home advantage might just swing it for them.
And of course, whoever wins this game plays England if England win against Norway, right? So you're basically saying if England do the do against Norway, then they will fall foul
in the semis.
I'm probably speaking too much ahead of myself, and it's probably very bad luck. Anita, who do you fancy from this final eight?
It's actually such a difficult one because I think in terms of the qualities I've seen in the French side, I think they have a good football mastery that they could bring to against a side like USA. But I actually think USA are quite a clinical side. I think they're the sort of side that when they get chances, they're quite good at putting them away. So it could really come down to that. And on this point, I actually fancy the USA.
Me too, Anita. We are on the same page. I also think, you know, just bearing in mind what we said a couple of podcasts ago, that there is potentially little whispers about how some of the French players are feeling physically great, but maybe are mentally a bit tired. And that's where the host nation, being the host nation, stands against you, isn't it, Tim? Because you've got the expectation, you've got the sellout crowds. It's everywhere you look. Maybe not if you're in Nice, because we've heard there aren't very many posters there, or Paris. But you know what I'm saying here, right?
I think this France-USA game is such a coin toss match. And I think if France win it, if they can get the result, they will be so pumped up. And I really think that they'll really think that they can do it if they can take out, you know, the reigning world champions. And I think that that momentum would push them over the line. But I have to say, maybe that's the same for the US. If the US put out the hosts, I mean, I'm not sure that the US lack belief or confidence in themselves anyway. But if they can take the hosts out, then I just think whoever wins this game, it will just give them that little 2 or 3% that will take them over the line.
OK, let's get stuck into England versus Norway, which is the next game that we'll be covering here on the podcast. It's a rest day on Wednesday, so this is Thursday's game. And it's a rematch of the round of 16 from 2015, which England won. But this looks like a more evolved Norway side, to me anyway, whilst England are yet to be completely tested for 90 minutes. This is the match where everyone has to step up, right, Anita?
Yeah, of course. I think the fun thing about it, having teammates playing for Norway and obviously England, they're going to know each other really well.
Yeah.
And they're going to really understand the strengths and weaknesses of those particular individuals are. So it's going to be really fun battle to sort of witness.
Give me a couple of key matchups that you're looking forward to seeing.
Of course, if Ellen starts, to see her up against Maria and Marin in defence is going to be really fun to watch.
Yes, so it's Maria Torres-Dottir and Marin Melder. Yeah.
And same goes for them. You know, our new teammate, Wrighton, going up against Millie is going to be really interesting.
Yes.
And maybe a nice welcome or not, however which way you look at it. But yeah, really, I think it's going to be a very exciting game because, you know, obviously England have done really well up until this point. But Norway have had arguably a tougher group phase to come out of. So they've had that experience of playing some tougher opposition, which might give them that kind of mental strength going into this match.
Well, before we get further into this, let's head out to France, where Jen O'Neill, editor of She Kicks magazine, is currently enjoying the sights of Le Havre.
Not suffering from the heat as much as other places in France so far, and I'm in a bar which is air conditioned, so I'm okay. I did go for a run early and I got a very, very, I was gently glowing like a pig. You would say, like the lady I am.
I heard you went for a run, and I was thinking, why? It's so freaking hot in France. Why are you going for a run?
Oh, that's the thing I do, and it's the best way to see your city when you travel around. I've run everywhere I've been, so I've been up on the cliff tops. You could see a view of Le Havre, and you can see all the defence bits left over from the Second World War. This was a place that was pretty much flattened, and that's why it's sort of brutalist architecture. Some people don't like it. I kind of like it.
Where's been the best place to go for a run in the World Cup venues of France?
Well, it's got to be Nice.
Yeah.
But I think Nice is probably the best for most things in the World Cup. We'll see. Maybe Lyon will be the place to be.
Maybe. That's still to come. Yes, Nice is the best place, unless you want to know that the World Cup is going on, I hear. It's not very well posted around.
Yeah, that was... That's a bit of a shame. But Valenciennes, definitely. Le Havre actually have stepped up as well. So, yeah, it is the northern cities that have embraced the tournament.
Well, it's good to hear. And hopefully people will be flocking over to Le Havre for England versus Norway, which is what we're here to talk about. I think it's safe to say that we'll not be seeing a match like we did against Cameroon again. Have you kind of recovered from that one?
I would be happy if we won 3-0.
Yes, that's fair.
Because it's almost like I forgot what the result was in all of the drama and what was truly one of the most bonkers things I've ever witnessed, never mind just a football match.
So facing Norway, who have been very good and consistent across the World Cup so far, where do you think that England will be needing to step up and take control of this match?
Well, yeah, you're right. I think take control, I suppose this is where the tournament really, really starts. In knockout games, you need to be aggressive. And Cameroon tried that. You have to stamp your authority on a match. So
maybe not literally on a player, though.
Yeah, stamping's probably not the best term I've ever used. All of the talk has been about Ada Hegerberg and her not being part of that unit. What that whole situation has done in their qualifying campaign and beating the Netherlands into second place in their group, their 2-0 win to get them the qualification and put Netherlands into the playoff. That whole journey has galvanised that team. And if they needed any more reason to be a really compact unit that worked together, then it came in the Australia game. They were phenomenal. And the way they dispatched their penalties was just incredible. Martin Sjögren, their coach, was talking about consequence thinking, where you don't worry about what's going to happen next. If they won that game, they won it together. If they lost that game, they lost it together. That kind of way, that mentality, that soccer mindset, as some people call it, is quite frightening when you compare it to an England team that hasn't quite got going yet.
Who are we looking to in the England team to keep tabs on the likes of Graham Hansen, of Hlofsen, of Ingrid Engen? Because those have been Norway's biggest threats.
I think that they can control Hlofsen because Hlofsen is his sort of standard centre forward, although a great one. I think they can control that. I think if Steph Houghton's fit, which is a doubt, then I think a player like Millie Bright has got Hlofsen in her pocket. I think we're okay with that. This is a big game that needs big game players. I think that England have got more big time players in the sense that they can shine on the big stage.
Jen O'Neill sounding quite bullish there. What do you think then? Have England got the defence to contain Hlofsen, Tim?
I have my doubts, I have to say. In fact, I think this whole Norway kind of attack, we spoke about Italy's front three being one of the most exciting of the tournament, but I've really, really been impressed by Norway's attack as well. You know, Caroline Graham Hansen, very direct, likes to take players on. I can see someone like Millie Bright perhaps coping with that quite well. But for me, it's the kind of the balance they've got out wide. Guro Retten, who's going to Chelsea this summer, she looks really, really exciting to me. And those kind of runs she makes in behind the fullback, I think, look like a real source of danger for England. And I think England have been a little bit susceptible to players running in behind them. And they've got Savic as well. I've probably butchered the pronunciation of that. Apologies to any Norwegian listeners. But she's been one of my favourite players in this tournament as well. They've got a really nice balance of creativity and directness. And this, for me, is going to be comfortably England's biggest test in defence.
They are traditionally very organised, Norway. They've not necessarily strayed too far from a certain brand of football over the last few decades, I think. But, you know, noticeably with this team, everything has to come through Graham Hansen. She's integral to that side. But we know that she had picked up an injury. Also, Norway were pushed in their last game, weren't they? So is there something to be said about the fact that if Graham Hansen's not on top form and if the players are tired, England could benefit from that?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, it was a surprise that Hansen played at all in the Australia game, let alone to play 120 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, she looked fine enough to me, the way she performed. But, you know, this Norway side certainly don't have the depth that England have. And, you know, Phil Neville's been rotating, which, you know, he's picked up some criticism from me as well, for doing that. But that could be a real ace up the sleeve for him, actually, particularly if this game does, for example, go into extra time. I think England will feel the fresher.
if Steph Horton isn't fully fit, and we're not sure what the situation is yet as we're recording this on Steph, are we looking at a McManus-Bright pairing at centre-back? What do you think, Anita?
I would imagine so, just because McManus has already been played in.
Yeah, so rather than Leah Williamson, who would be the kind of like-for-like player, I suppose, in terms of position.
I think it's important to have those partnerships and relationships in the back line, especially at a stage now that they're at, where it's such an important game and there's going to be so much, obviously, expectation and pressure, nerves and things like that. It might be a difficult game. Of course, we all would have liked to have seen Leah Williamson actually get a game at this phase in the competition. But for that reason, I think it's likely to be McManus.
Yeah.
See, I think it will be Leah, actually.
I was going to ask if we know how many times McManus and Bright have played together.
I have my suspicions that the way Phil Neville sees it is that he sees Abby McManus as the backup to Millie Bright and Leah as the backup to Steph, because I think Leah's quite similar to Steph Horton. She's a very similar type of defender and she's very similar in the way that she plays the ball out from the back. So it's only a suspicion. I don't think Phil Neville's ever actually said that, but I think it was kind of telling that when Millie went off in the first or second game, that it was Abby that came in. Whereas I just wonder if he's got those two pairings in mind.
All right, well, let's play England player bingo, because we never know, do we? 23 to choose from. Which players is Phil going to mark off before he gets his full house?
So I think Beth Mead will start this game.
Okay.
I don't know if it'll be for Nikita Paris or Tony Duggan. He's been rotating those wide forward roles, but I think the fact that Beth didn't play any minutes at all against Cameroon, I think he'll value that kind of freshness, particularly in those wide forward roles where he likes, you know, he likes the kind of directness and the pace. So I think Beth will start, maybe for Tony Duggan.
I'm going to pitch in and say Karen Carney has to feature, particularly if Steph's not playing, by the way, but Karen Carney has to be an ace up his sleeve. And I think her experience and her speed, especially if Norway looked tired, could be a real asset.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think Kaz is really a dynamic winger and she's got so much. She's clever and she's got so much experience. And to have someone on the pitch like that who can get the team behind her and she can inspire, hopefully, through her performance is an important tool for the team.
Who else, Anita?
I wondered if Demi Stokes might get a look in at left back, actually, because I think we've struggled a little bit conceding to long balls in behind in that space, or the space that we leave in our fullback positions. And I think Demi is
that because Greenwood has been bombing forward? Is that why the space has been created?
Yeah, I think that's part of the issue, but I also question maybe how, you know, her 1v1 defending, recovering back towards the box, how good and solid she can be in those areas, because she is so offensive, which is also an asset. But I think Demi probably offers a bit of balance in both directions.
I think it'll also be interesting to see what he does at the base of his midfield when you consider Caroline Graham-Hansen plays that number 10 role generally and likes to run at players. And, you know, I think Kira Walsh is a fabulous player, but I think she's more of a ball distributor than a defender. But then you look in the squad and Lucy Staniforth and Jade Moore, they're kind of similar players. So
they've
wondering,
not had a lot of game time though, have they? And
no,
this is a pretty important game.
No, and so I think that Phil Neville will ask Jill Scott to stay quite close to whoever he has.
We're
gonna
need to
midfield.
Watch Graham-Hansen for sure. Yeah. Someone's gonna have to be on her. Okay, well, let's get things from a Norway perspective by speaking to Christian Nielsen. He's a Norwegian commentator for their national broadcaster, NRK. Christian, is there a score to settle here after England sent Norway packing from the last World Cup?
I think that definitely is an issue. A lot of the players that participated in the World Cup in 2015 are still in the squad, and they've been talking about that. They want revenge. They want to beat England this time. If they're able to do it, that's another question. I think that a lot of people here in Norway think that maybe the quarterfinal is as far as they will go this year. A lot of people think that England have got a stronger team and a better squad. But the team that we have now in Norway have shown a couple of times the last year that they're capable of doing much better than the people around them think. So anything is really possible, and with a bit of revenge feeling as well, everything really is possible, but we'll see.
We've been really impressed over here, actually, by Norway, you know, particularly in that game against France as well. So you're saying that sort of national belief has a way to catch up with perhaps what the rest of the world is thinking, because we are pretty impressed with you.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people here in Norway really have got, they've opened their eyes now for this team and what they're capable of. Obviously, before the championship started, a lot of people were saying that without Arda Hegerberg, who's been the best player in the world the last couple of years, this team hasn't got a chance, especially since they did terribly bad in the Euros in 2017. They lost all three matches and didn't score any goals. A lot of people had really written this team off. So that they've been able to get to a quarterfinal in this championship and beating Australia.
Just as an aside, how much is she who will not be named? In fact, that's what we're calling Arda Hegerberg, because we got fed up of everyone speaking about her when they spoke about Norway. Is it as bad for you guys over there? How much is she still dominating conversations around women's football over there?
It's really dominated before the World Cup started, but after what they've shown during the games in the World Cup so far, I can't remember seeing her name mentioned that many times. So it really dominated the headlines before the World Cup, and especially with an interview that she did where she talked about a lot of things that were wrong with the association and the team. But when they now gotten to the quarterfinal, it has really quietened down a lot.
Are you as fascinated with Ingrid Engen as we are over here? Because the look she gave when she was accused of fouling during that France game, the look she gave turned into a meme. She's known on this podcast as Angry Ingrid Engen because of that
All
look.
Right.
Are you guys as fascinated with her as we are, or is this just an offside rule podcast thing?
I don't think that the fascination is so huge here in Norway. I was in France and I did the commentary for that game, so I saw the look on her face when that situation happened and after that. But that's probably more of an issue for you guys, even if I can just imagine the look that she gave, and that it scared a lot of people.
Yes, it was enough to turn you to stone, Christian, believe me. And what about you personally? Do you think Norway will win this one? What are you expecting?
I actually belong to that camp who think that the World Cup is going to be over after the quarterfinals when it comes to the Norwegian team, because I think that England have got a stronger first 11, but they also got a stronger squad. And our coach, Martin Sjögren, has played almost the same players in every match so far. So I think they're really getting tired now. They might beat England, but I think England are probably, in my eyes, 60-40% favourites in this match. But they've shown time and time again that they can do things that people don't expect. So we'll see on Thursday.
Thanks very much to Christian Nilsen, their football commentator over in Norway. Well, some excellent news for Georgia Stanway's brother, particularly if she does start, Tim and Anita, and all those going to Glastonbury as well, because the festival made this announcement earlier today. They say, we are delighted to be able to announce that, of course, we'll be screening the Lionesses Women's World Cup quarterfinal against Norway on Thursday on the West Holt Stage's big screen. Just in case anyone's going, there's the info. Kickoff 8 p.m. Thank you very much. Stanway, Georgia, will look out for your brother. Marvellous news for everyone going to Glastonbury. We need a score prediction from both of you then. Let's go to Tim Stillman first.
I think England are going to win 2-1 after extra time.
Anita.
Oh, you had to do that to me, didn't you? It's a setup. I was going to say 1-1 extra time. And then win on penalties.
Oh, penalties all the way. Well, we shall find out on Thursday when, Anita, you are back in with us.
Yep.
And we'll get jello'd if you don't get it right. As ever, we're on Twitter, Instagram. It's at Offside Rule Pod to keep up with all the latest goings on in the football world. We've got our website too. It's offsideruledpodcast.com. There's a team of the round of 16 coming soon. I wonder if VAR will be promoted to striker. Tim, thank you. Anita, thank you for bringing in your camera team. Yes, folks listening to this, we've had cameras spying on us the whole way through. It's because Anita is starring in the Chelsea Women documentary coming out next year. And we might be too if we played our cards right today. If we're not in there, just ignore everything that I've just said, OK? Listeners, thank you for telling us where you're getting us, in your cars around France, on the trains, running past donut shops whilst we're talking about donuts. How weird is that? And over in America too. We are loving your listening work. Keep telling your friends, and we'll speak to you in the aftermath of England versus Norway. Au revoir.
The Offside Rule Women's World Cup Edition is a Muddy Knees Media production in association with Spotify.